It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for the 34th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks for listening. This week we have a real special episode in that we have Bob Schreck from Legendary Comics, who's going to talk about Frank Miller's Holy Terror with me. It's an interesting interview I think you'll enjoy. Also, I review this week's comics. I talk with Peter Casazza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. I talk with Ian Cullen and John Luca Glazer about this week's news and previews, so you won't want to miss it. We have a lot going on this time, so let's get to it.
I'm talking today with Bob Schreck from Legendary Comics. Actually, your company name goes by what? Legendary?
We're basically generally known as Legendary, and as people will divide out the various companies, it's Legendary Pictures, Legendary Comics. You know, we have a new television division that's in development right now as well. So,
cool.
Depending upon who you're talking about, you know, whatever fits, we answer to.
Okay, now you have a long history in comics. You've worked in several companies and written as well and edited. So you've been really involved with comics for some time now. So that's a good thing going to Legendary as they're getting started. Could you give us a little bit of history as to how Legendary got into comics?
Sure. Thomas Tull, the guy who is the CEO, head honcho of Legendary Pictures and all of the various divisions, including comics, is obviously a big comic book fan, and hence the Batman series of movies with Dark Knight Rising coming out, I believe, next year, and 300 with Frank Miller. So there's a big, giant love of the medium from Thomas himself. And with the progression of the way Hollywood and comic books have been dancing around each other all these years, it seemed a pretty natural thing for him to move into producing his own comic book line.
Well, it fascinates me that oftentimes so many people who get into comics have a film background. So the interaction of the two is becoming more and more, you know, it's becoming tighter. And so it just makes perfect sense in my mind to have like a movie company that also has a comic book arm as well as a TV arm. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the two mediums are stepbrothers. They're not. Film is a far more passive medium. You sit and you take in what is delivered unto you, whereas comics aren't quite as proactive and as reading a book, but you have to actually learn the language of comics. It helps to learn the language of comics at a younger age, because I've noticed people who really don't read them until they're 20 or 25, they have a little difficulty realizing that in between those panels is where you engage your imagination and you fill in the blanks of between panel one and panel two.
Mm-hmm.
Some people literally can't think, well, what do I do now? Where do I read next? So it's a funny little medium. And, you know, again, for me, I waited late, actually. I didn't start reading comics until I was about 14. Mm-hmm. I was into making movies. I made movies at the age of 9.
Huh.
So I backed into comic books.
Oh, that's interesting. I usually ask people about that, how you got into comics and what it was that attracted you to it. So you did it the way that a lot of people do. They like movies and they find this medium that they can actually direct or whatever they want to do with it. As long as they just write it on paper, it can come out. And that's just kind of interesting to me. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I was making movies as a kid, and then I met the guy who was my paperboy. We discovered that we both liked making movies. And then after writing our first little featurette, he turned and went, "Hey, you read comics, don't you?" I was like, "Nah, that's for kids." He goes, "Well, next time I saw him, I was like, hey, check this out." He gave me a Fantastic Four, and I gave it a shot, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is incredible." So.
As we get through this conversation, I want to talk a little bit about what you think the future is, including like digital comics. But first, let's get to Holy Terror, which was your first graphic novel, and that came out in September, and it did spectacularly well. What you were telling me before we started to record, some of the accolades that you've gotten, do you want to let people know?
Well, yeah, it's a Frank Miller creation, and when you're dealing with Frank Miller, he's the Beatles and the Rolling Stones put together, and the guy is master of the medium and has set the comics industry on its ear several times during the course of his incredible career. So coming out of the gate with the Frank Miller graphic novel was quite a way to start, and it was the number one graphic novel for the month of September that it shipped, and it also then positioned Legendary Comics as the 10th largest publisher with that one graphic novel for the month of September. We actually charted as publisher number 10 in the entire market.
Wow, that's a good way to start. How did this come to be? How did you get Frank Miller to create Holy Terror for you guys?
Well, that's a whole long and sordid tale. I've known Frank for many, many years, and I've worked with Frank over those years, and I was one of the editors on several of his Sin City graphic novels. We did a All Mess of Fun Stories in Dark Horse Presents when I was the editor of that anthology at Dark Horse. When I started Oni Press in 97, I left Dark Horse and decided to start a company with an old buddy, Joe Nosmack. And I walked away from Dark Horse clean, having still, you know, I'd known Frank for years. But once I put the shingle out there and said, hey, here's Oni Press, about a week later, I got a call from Frank's agent saying, Frank would like to hear you a book called Bad Boy that he put together over in England with Simon Bisley. So I have a very good, long-standing, great relationship with him as a beyond editor and creator. We're old chums. So I had left D.C. I got laid off from D.C. Comics after about a 9.5 year stint there, and then went to IDW with Ted Adams and the group there for about a year. And things were progressing, and suddenly, out of the blue, a phone call came from Frank, and he had a discussion with Thomas Tull. And Thomas was looking to start a company, and a comics company, and Frank and I had begun Holy Terror as a Batman project, about 7 years prior. And about 4 years after, 3 or 4 years after it had begun, Frank had realized that the project was really no longer something that Batman could, as a character, deliver the message for, that the character needed to be able to do things that Batman, the character, couldn't. And that was while I was still at DC, and Frank, hey, gee, do you guys mind if I move this over to a different character and it no longer be a Batman book? And DC said, yeah, not a problem, don't worry. And then time went on, and Frank hadn't finished it, and still hadn't finished it, and then suddenly it was years later, and there I was at IDW, and there Thomas Tull was, ready to start up a company, and it all came together. So Frank gave me a holler and said, would you like to come and finish out the book that we started 8 years ago?
It's amazing. One of the things I'm fascinated about the book is the format. It's not in a standard comic size. It's actually wider than it is tall. And I was just curious as to how you all decided that format.
It's done occasionally. Frank Miller's 300 that he did with Lynn Varley years ago was basically the same format. It was originally printed as double-page spreads with a spine, kind of a comic book, slightly different comic book version, but it wasn't all in one piece. It was an episodic. So with the clout that Frank has, when he puts out a book, the world pays attention. He said, gosh, let's just go this CinemaScope way right out of the gate and just make it a hardcover, like I said, CinemaScope version. So it's been done before, but it's not done that often because it's a risky business, but it's easier to take those risks with somebody like Frank. So.
Well, I was really interested, too, in Frank's use of color. You know, it's a mostly black and white book with occasional color bits and jagged, which is very much like Sin City was. And that's becoming the Frank Miller style. That is the, you know, it's recognizable. If you didn't know who made the book and you opened it up, you'd probably say, oh, this looks like that's like Frank Miller.
So definitely.
He's carved out his own unique identity. And I imagine in a way that made selling the book and making the book happen a lot easier.
Yeah, the way printing costs are now, even if we had gone full color, it really wouldn't have affected the price of the book so much. I mean, once you turn that press on, the money starts rolling. So, but no, and Frank, if you look at his career, his entire career. He has literally redefined himself and redefined how the industry looks at not only his work, but at comics in general, 4, 5, 6 times. I mean, you can pick up various books and just go, oh my God, wait a minute, this is Frank Miller too? He doesn't like repeating himself, and he doesn't like getting into any kind of regular groove.
Right.
He likes to mix it up and find new frontiers.
Well, I'm really happy for the success of it.
Well, thank you.
The sales were great. Were you all happy with the critical response to the book?
Let me go back. Frank and I, while we were doing a book called The Dark Knight Strikes Again, which was heavy quotes on this, a sequel to The Dark Knight Returns, and it really wasn't a sequel to The Dark Knight Returns. What it was Frank returning to do another Batman story, but he didn't want to repeat or continue the tone and atmosphere of The Dark Knight Returns. That was 1986, and this was 2000. Well, actually, we started it in 99, I guess we started it. So we were doing, before it began, basically what happened was I got hired by DC, and about 6 months after I got hired, I got a phone call, which is what Frank always does, which is a great thing. If those phone calls stop, I'm going to get nervous. But he gave a phone call, and I said, hey, Frank, how's it going? He's like, I'm great, Trek. How are you? I said, I'm good. He goes, hey, I'm calling to see if you want to go on a suicide run. And I knew what he meant. I knew exactly that he knew, no matter what he did with this Batman book, everyone would be disappointed in it, and so many would hate it because they couldn't go home to 1986 and re-experience reading The Dark Knight Returns. He didn't want to do that again.
Mm-hmm. I'm one of the people that actually loved the second book. I loved the first one. The first one was terrific. The second one, a lot of people, you're right, a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, it's not the same as the first book. But I said, why would he do the same thing over again? We already have that. So I enjoyed the second book. The second book was great. It was his take on the 60s superheroes is what I saw.
Exactly.
And I loved the book.
Exactly.
And to this day, I still love it. And people always say, oh, that was not a good book. But I don't think that. I think that was him having fun and showing what the 60s were like through Frank Miller's prism. And this is why, and I think Holy Terror, there were some folks that didn't like Holy Terror. It was too close to Batman, they said, which I always thought was funny because, you know, this, if anybody can do Batman and do anybody that's like Batman, certainly Frank Miller. Second thing they said, it was too violent, all this kind of stuff. I said, you haven't been reading Frank Miller before, have you? You know, this is Frank Miller's stuff. You know, this is his trade. You know, this is the way he does things. He makes things happen that make you, you'll either wince or you go, oh my goodness, or, you know, you'll get some kind of reaction out of him. And this is the thing with Holy Terror. This is what I was asking about, how you felt about critical response, because it was a little mixed.
Yeah. We knew we were going to get bad reviews before he even put pen to paper. People just want to dislike him. And it's what happens. It's in human nature. People make you king only because they're going to really relish the dethroning you. That's really what they, you know, many people want to do. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about The Dark Knight Strikes Again was, almost everybody, like James Kocholka, Tony Millionaire, all these guys who are the independent, far away from mainstream people, were absolutely in love with the book because they understood what you just said. It was a celebration of the superhero. It was a celebration of the 60s and leotards and people running around and doing what they're supposed to do. But anyway, so we were expecting the critical screening and pine. We were expecting people to read the book or not even read the book and decide that Frank hated all Muslim people because of it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. I've said this before. I find it very odd that the United States government is sending out drone strikes and killing real live people who are associated with or are a part of Al-Qaeda. And that is met by, okay, when's the next commercial on CNN? But if you do it in a fictional way with comic book characters, it's somehow outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody died on those pages. So you're right. I think Frank, he makes you think, and he does it better than anybody else. People just wanted to dislike this book, and there have been reviews that have actually turned themselves around. One of my favorite reviews was a guy who said, you know what, I don't think I like this book, but I'm not going to say anything yet. And he literally did three reviews, and by the end of the third review, which took him maybe another 3 or 4 weeks, the review was, you know what, I was wrong, and I really do like this book, and I think I had to fight through my knee-jerk reactions before I could finally see it for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, you hit one of the things that I saw that made my head tilt. Frank Miller doesn't like Muslims. It's an anti-Muslim book. And I was like, what? You know, when I go back and read the book, I don't see that. I understand some comics retailers have told me they were a little nervous about carrying the book, so they didn't order as many as they might have. But the thing was, I was happy to see the sales figure. Because when you guys sold that many of them, even with all this hesitation going on in the comic stores, I was very happy to see that. And I think that speaks, you know, volumes about you guys and what you're doing, and especially with Mr. Miller, too.
Yes, no, well, thank you. And people, on average, most of the actual fan reaction that we've gotten has been very positive. They know who Frank is, and they're not going to make those judgments ahead of time. It's the, you know, the reviewers that jump to that, because for them it's controversy and it's tickets and it gets everybody all excited and going. But the bottom line is, if I wasn't Frank's editor, if I was a guy just going into a comic book store and not having any kind of relationship with comics publishing, how can I not own another Frank Miller book? I don't think it would be possible.
Well, I agree with you on that. Another thing that interests me so much is I mentioned the formatting, the size was different. There was a lot of different things about it. It reminded me very much of Jeff Smith's Bone, which was black and white in a non-black and white era. A big success. And now this book comes out and it does extremely well. You broke all the rules. I mean, you didn't have full color. You didn't have the right size to fit in the shelves. You didn't do all these things. And yet it still turned out to be a big success. And I'm always happy when something like that happens. I love it when something comes and breaks the rules and throws all the preconceived notions out the window and still does very well. It's always heartening to me to see that.
Thank you. And that's exactly how Frank feels, and that's how I feel. And I think that's how any publisher or editor worth their salt, the joy of the game is taking those risks and rolling the dice and going to Vegas and saying, okay, let's see if we can make this work. And it's never fun when it doesn't work, but boy, oh boy, even losing is an exciting proposition.
That's pretty interesting. So does Frank have any follow-up for this, or he's probably going to do another project rather than do an Unholy Terror or something like that?
Right. Yeah, Holy Terror is pretty much, I mean, Holy Terror came out of when we were working on Dark Knight Strikes Again. I was living 15 minutes away from the Lincoln Tunnel, and Frank was in Hell's Kitchen, and we got hit down the street. I mean, it was a devastating day. We actually, you know, I called 5 people that day in trembling, crying, terror, fear, and Frank was one of them, just to go, Frank, are you and Lynn okay? And, yeah, I'm fine. Are you okay? Okay, great. I love you. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. So it was a devastation. So that's where this book came from. And it took all these years to gestate and then become a reality. So he's done that. That's pretty much done in one type of book. But he's already begun Xerxes, which is a prequel to 300. And that's appeared in Dark Horse Presents, I think with 1 or 2 episodes so far. And he's continuing with that, but also on his horizon is Sin City 2, the motion picture.
Right.
So hopefully that'll start going into production, I don't know, this coming spring. I really don't know what the dates are yet, but I know that him and Robert Rodriguez have been working on the script, and that's going to be the next project for him in terms of film.
Okay, that's what Frank's up to. How about you guys? You all have more comics in the pipeline, and can you tell us what books are coming out? Do you have any idea about when they're going to hit the bookstores?
Yeah, I have a long-standing relationship with another guy who did a Batman book with me, actually, called Batman U100. His name is Paul Pope. And, yeah, he's a phenomenal talent, a great writer, artist. And years ago, while I was at Dark Horse and in charge of Dark Horse Presents, we did 12 episodes of a story called The One-Trick Ripoff. So it's been collected once in black and white through Dark Horse. The rights reverted back to Paul. So we're having it colored for the very first time by Jamie Grant and Dominic Reagan, the guys who worked on All-Star Superman with me at DC Comics.
Wow.
Can't get that any better colorists. So they're coloring that story, which is about 105 pages long. And then we're calling this the One-Trick Ripoff plus Deep Cuts. So this is going to be about a 300-page graphic novel, and more than half of it is going to include beautiful work that has never been seen before by Paul Pope. He got hired by Kodansha, the Japanese comics publisher, in the 90s, right around the time that he was doing The One Trick. So Kodansha hired him, and he did a whole mess of stories for them in black and white and in manga style, meaning reading right to left instead of left to right. Mm-hmm. So we're rearranging the panels, and we're coloring a lot of that. And so not only are you going to get The One Trick ripoff for the first time in color by the best colorists in the business, but those colorists are also putting together all this beautiful Kodansha work that has never been seen. Not only has it not ever been seen in the United States, but it was never published by Kodansha in Japan. So this is never, ever before seen material. So that'll be out in May. And then in June, July, somewhere around there, we've got another book called The Tower Chronicles, where I've enlisted my old buddy and cohort in crime, Matt Wagner, is writing. Yeah, he's writing The Tower Chronicles, and he's co-developed it. It's based on an idea by Thomas Tull himself. Thomas wanted to work with a writer, and I knew the best guy to call would be Matt, and they got along thick as thieves. And so The Tower Chronicles is a great kind of a supernatural bounty hunter guy who has an ulterior motive, a mission beyond what we all see immediately as his, instead of a people's day job, his night job. Mm-hmm. And Simon Bisley, the great Simon Bisley, who everybody knows from the Lobo and all sorts of great works over the years, he's going to be illustrating it. And that will be four prestige books, four 64-page prestige books in color. Wow. Like I said, the June, July, that will be coming out. And we've got about six other properties in development that I don't have the paperwork done yet. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be making some really big announcements. The goal here is what Thomas and I want to do, and what Thomas said to me the minute we met. We want to do a Tiffany line of really great comics. We don't have to put out 50 books a month in order to pay the electric bill.
Okay.
Zach Galifianakis and Robert Downey Jr. and all these great movies allows us to pick and choose and try to get the finest creators in the business to put out what we consider to be rock solid, amazing comic book stories. And they've got to be great comic book stories first and foremost. We're not interested in looking for 1,000 different things and throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks. We really want to do nothing but what we perceive as the very best.
What I hear you saying is that you're going to shy away from, say, the monthly comic grind and stick more to when the thing's done, put it out.
Yeah, I mean, there'll probably be a monthly or two here and there, but even at that, there'll be maxi series at best, 12 issues long. Mostly it'll be graphic novels and various new formats. We're really, developing all sorts of new ways of presenting this material. And as you had mentioned earlier, digital is one of them.
Right. My question was going to be, how do you perceive digital going forward? It's interesting because you mentioned the 50 books, and of course, that's an allusion to DC's new 52. The paper copies have sold very well, but the digital stuff hasn't done significantly better than in past issues have done. So I'm just curious, going forward, you're thinking digitally, how are you going to use digital formats to your advantage?
Well, we don't want to give any new tricks away,
okay. But
there are new ways. There are ways of being able to make digital more appealing than what it's been so far. I mean, it's pretty remarkable with all of Marvel's and DC's libraries, these deep, deep libraries, that digital hasn't taken off. And I think to some degree, digital will always have that trouble because the medium itself is tactile. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to pick it up, and it's nice to be able to pick up an iPad, but you can't roll it up and put it in your back pocket. It is an amazing invention, and I love my iPad, I do. Mm-hmm. But I much prefer to be able to pick up a comic book and hold it. That said, the future is the future, and if you don't embrace the future, then it runs you over and leaves you as roadkill. So we are well aware that digital is going to be a major, major factor in the future. It's just not paying any electric bills right now.
See, that's the interesting thing to me is that there are so many people now who are saying that the digital is the way. And there are certain strips and books and stuff that are coming out only digitally. But it's very difficult to make money off the web because people expect web stuff to be free. So it's a very interesting thing. As you guys move forward, I'm sure this is stuff you guys discuss all the time because this is something to be concerned about. It was like when CDs came along. I went to the album store and there were no albums left. If you suddenly go to the comic store and they're handing out little zip drives or something to your books, the ones that you specifically ordered on it or like an FTP site or something, then and paper copies just for some reason just suddenly disappear. You guys have to be ready for that.
Yes. No, I use this often. It's the throw me the whip, throw me the idol scenario. It's like you really got to know when it's time to jump, and you have to keep an eye on it and listen to your gut and go, okay, this is the moment that we have to jump in. It might be a little rocky, but we think we can weather the storm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting time, and God knows I'd rather live in interesting times than not.
Well, as far as comics goes, this is a real transition period. So I'm going to be curious to see what you all turn out. I really loved Holy Terror. I thought it was great fun. I'm looking forward to the stuff you've mentioned and wish you guys much success. I don't think we have nearly enough comic companies out there. I think variety is the spice of life, and we need more variety in comics.
Great. And thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Well, it was good talking with you, Bob. Hopefully we get to do that again in the future sometime.
I'm all for it. You take care, and thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
Together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
And let's take a look at what books came out this week. The book of the week for me was Batman Noel, done by Lee Bermejo. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's inspired by the Charles Dickens classic A Christmas Carol, and it has Batman going in some unusual places and doing some unusual things. We get to see the three spirits, and we get to see who Scrooge is, which was a surprise to me. It has an interesting little ending that I enjoyed very much, and I really liked the book. It's hardcover, so it's a little more expensive than usual. It's $22.99, but my favorite line of the whole book is when Batman is speaking to Bob Cratchit and says, "Show him what a hero is." I like the book a lot. I think it's going to be the beginning of a new holiday tradition for me to read this on Christmas Eve. It'll get me in the mood for Christmas, so I hope you'll do the same. Again, it's Batman Noel. It's called the Deluxe Edition, and it's $22.99. I think you'll really like it. Now, new 52 books that came out this week included Detective Comics, which continues a great storyline. I really like it. It's number 3. And Oh Man just continues to get better and better, it seems to me. I'm getting more and more gripped each issue. So that's a great comic. Action Comics number 3 did a nice bit of fooling for me. I'll be curious to see how Luthor explains working with Brainiac when he abhors Superman so much. Swamp Thing had a lot of curious developments, so it moves up this month in my estimation. Also, I like Men of War, as the interesting war stories continue to engage me. I liked Batwing, which never takes the easy way out. Hawk and Dove is kind of a lot of fun. The avatars are reminding me now of the Green Lantern Corps and all the different kinds of colors that we've had in there. Stormwatch is a great book. I think the Green Arrow is still a great action comic, although some people don't seem to like it. Ian Cullen, for one. Red Lanterns is a great unusual core and a great unusual story. Static Shock does well, but I'd like to see that book pick up the pace a little more. OMAC is fun. It's a good book, but it's sort of slow to me in some senses. But, we'll see. We'll see how OMAC does going forward. It was the lowest selling of the first month of the New 52. Also out this week was Joe the Barbarian, the deluxe edition hardcover. I've spoken about looking forward to that book before, and I hope you'll get it. American Vampire number 20 by Mr. Scott Snyder's great. Irredeemable number 31. Peanuts number 0. And Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes number 1 all came out from Boom Studios, and those are all worth your shekels. Avengers Academy from Marvel's great, but I think you're really want to be sure to get Moriarty, Marksman, Invincible, and Infinite Vacation from Image. Those are great books as well. And those are the books that came out this week.
for an update on how things are going in the comic shops with Pete Casaza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. How you doing, Pete?
Pretty good. Actually, having a really good day.
Oh, good. Let's take a look back at October. We talked a little bit about September before. September was a good month for you, as I remember. And I was just curious to see how things go moving forward in October. How was October like for you guys?
Actually, it was slightly better than September. So this DC relaunch has really been a great thing for the comic stores across the country.
Wow, I'm interested. It's even better than September was. Well, what do you attribute that to? Is the word of mouth starting to reach out to people?
Yes, that's definitely part of it. The DC comics are good. You know, the majority of them are pretty good. Word's getting out to people that, hey, you really need to check out some of these comics. Also, some of the advertising that DC did, you know, reaching out to new people has worked. You know, for people who aren't into comics, you know, as much, it takes a little longer for them to get the message DC was putting out about the relaunch and how good the comics are. So we're seeing some new people come in, some people who heard something about it but couldn't get in September, they're coming in now. And actually getting more people into the comic stores helps IDW, helps Marvel, helps Image sell comics. So I've seen an uptick in sales across all my comics, but mostly led by DC.
It's interesting because the notion that a lot of water rises the whole boat, not just part of it. So
exactly.
You're seeing that as the other comics go up. Well, let's start with the other stuff first, and then we'll go back to DC and talk a little bit. Which books did you notice went up significantly from outside of DC?
I don't know that I would say there was a significant increase in sales, but, you know, some of the IDW books like Planet of the Apes and a few other the books they do that are non-superhero books definitely sold better than I thought. Recently, they just suddenly there's, you know, selling more copies, just a couple extra copies, but, you know, all those copies add up. The Marvel books are pretty strong this month. The wrap-up of Fear Itself, the final issue, actually did surprisingly well for us, even though it was a little more expensive. People seem to really enjoy it. And just in general, like Ultimate Spider-Man and just some of the other, you know, better selling Marvel books has really done well. The X-Men books in particular, I think, have jumped up. They were sales in the X-Men books in August and September were a little disappointing. And then I saw a big uptick in October for them. So people definitely, there were more people coming in and more of them were, hey, I haven't read X-Men or I've missed the last few issues of X-Men. So they started picking those up. So, you know, like I said, you get more people through the door, you show them more of your product. They see things they haven't seen in a long time or stopped reading years ago. And they're like, yeah, I'll get an issue or I'll get two issues. And, you know, it just helps. Every little bit helps.
Now, you said Ultimate Spider-Man's doing well. Is the character really helping the sales, you think?
Yes, it was funny because Marvel really promoted the death of the Ultimate Peter Parker, and sales were good on that, but they weren't blockbuster. But the launch, the actual first issue of the new Ultimate Spider-Man with the new young kid, really got people interested. A lot of people really wanted to see what was going on with that, and they've been coming back for issues 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. One thing that Marvel did was they got the first 3 issues of the new Ultimate Spider-Man series out in about 6 or 7 weeks, and that's really helped people. People have been coming back on a regular basis, like, oh, issue 3's out already, so they'll grab 2 and 3 at the same time, or some people will come in and grab all 3 issues because, again, someone they know heard about it and told them about it, or it's for a friend, so they just came in and buy all 3 issues because they're interested.
Interesting. So, okay, let's get to the DC books. As I was looking over the September numbers that Diamond put out, the Batman was the top seller.
Yeah, that surprised me a little bit, actually. I mean, Batman's great. I really enjoyed it myself, but it wasn't our best seller. Our best sellers, in September, there wasn't an issue of Justice League. Issue number 1 of Justice League came out technically in August, and so we sold a lot in September, but there wasn't a new issue until October, which did really well for us. So our number 1 sellers at Big Planet and College Park have been Justice League, Action Comics, and then Batman. So for our stores, Batman actually came in 3rd, but all 3 of them have been excellent issues. And also I put in that Animal Man has been enjoyed by the most people, both by our customers and by people online. So it's definitely been a really big breakout hit.
Such a big surprise, actually, because, you know, I've been reading it as well, and I didn't expect much from it. You know, I bought all the New 52, and that was the one I have to say that surprised me. I was very surprised by how good the story was and, you know, how engaging it is with the characters, you know, because always the family was sort of he dragged them along with him. They were always going, oh, buddy, don't go and do this, and oh, please, you know. But now all of a sudden, they're knee-deep in the story, and, man, it's a much better story than I've ever seen Animal Man get.
Yes, and the fact that, you know, in the scene, his wife and him are talking about what his role is, and that, you know, he needs to go do his job and be superhero. He's a better person when he goes out occasionally and helps and saves people than when he's just hanging around the house all the time, you know? I thought that was a great point, you know? Yeah. That's real insight there.
Yeah, I just think it's such a good book. That has to be the surprise hit for me of the New 52, the one that I was most surprised by how great it was.
Yeah.
So as far as the rest of them goes, OMAC was the lowest selling of the bunch.
Yeah, it's funny because I actually enjoy OMAC, but it is kind of a hard sell and it is kind of an odd book. In our store, actually, Hawk and Dove, the Rob Liefeld book, does worse for us than OMAC. OMAC does slightly better, but there's been six or seven of the DC books that have done pretty poorly. They did okay on number one, but issue two, the drop-off in issue two was fairly significant. I even question whether some of them will make it all the way to issue six. So it'll be interesting to see.
Can you tell us which ones those were? I mean, I realize this is to your store. We're not necessarily extrapolating out to everybody, but which books didn't do well in your store?
I can't remember all of them off the top of my head, but certainly Hawk and Dove, OMAC, Men of War is kind of interesting, but didn't do very well. And interestingly, Blackhawks, which I thought the first issue was pretty weak, the second issue was much better. And we're actually seeing an increase in sales on Blackhawk number two because it was a stronger issue. iVampire did okay. It didn't rock out of the gate, but I thought it was an okay story, pretty good story. And sales have been okay. Mr. Terrific did pretty well for us in the first issue, but this drop-off for number two was pretty significant, so I don't know what lies there. So, I mean, most of the issues we got, the better ones, the drop-off was only like, you know, 10% maybe for issue two. Some of the other weaker issues, the drop-off might have been 40%. So, clearly, a lot of people were just buying issue number one to try it and decided they were not going to come back for number two. So, it's hard to say exactly who the weakest ones are and will people come back in a couple more weeks and then buy number two? Because it's only been a few weeks that some of these number twos have been out. So it's a little too early to say, but we've definitely seen some significant sales drop-offs on a few of them.
Okay. Now, are you buying the second and third printings of the number ones? I keep seeing in the lists that Diamond puts out that they're putting out like a third printing now of Swamp Thing number one and stuff like that. Did you order well enough that you don't need those, or are those helpful to you?
Those are definitely helpful. I thought I ordered very strong, especially on Detective. Detective sold very well. Sold out of the first printings, so I ordered a lot of the second printings, and I actually sold out of all the second printings of number one. So the fact that I desperately needed a third printings, same with Animal Man. We've been, you know, promoting Animal Man so much that we sold out of, I ordered like 50 second printings of number one and sold out of every single one of them.
Wow.
So that was surprising to me. That was definitely shocking. So
you talked about the fact that you were getting more people with subscriptions and people are clearing out their boxes more than they used to. Is that still holding true?
For the most part, you know, people are definitely excited to come in and they're definitely buying as much as they can. You know, money's tight for most people and there's a lot of new stuff they want to buy, so they can't seem to buy as much as they want to buy, but they're definitely doing a better job of getting in. A few people have had some trouble where they have a large number of titles they want to get, but can only buy half of them, so that's causes us a little bit of trouble, you know, trying to get people to be realistic about what they can afford to buy. But overall, yes, we've had a lot more people come in, a lot more people be excited about comics, and a lot more people buy as much as they possibly can afford to buy. So,
okay, are you still seeing like new people come in, new faces that you haven't seen before, or has that phenomenon pretty much ended?
Yeah, just the other day, I had somebody come in and said, "Hey, I heard DC Comics relaunched all their titles, and I want to come in and check out the Superman and Batman titles." And I was like, "Sure, absolutely." So we're still seeing people who are getting the word, and they're coming in for the first time. So we're still showing them around the store, giving them the lay of the land. So yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. My hope is that it's not just DC, that everybody will benefit from this, because, you know, there are a lot of good books. And as much as I'm a big DC fan, and I am, I also enjoy other books. Enjoy some of the IDW ones and a lot of the Image ones, and there's 215 Inks and all these other people. And I keep hearing people say they still struggle if they're trying to get a new book out. Do you find that people are sampling, like, let's say, some of the more obscure stuff, or are they sticking to DC and Marvel? More? You said some of the books are up, but if you're like a brand new book that's never been out before and you're hitting the stands now, what do you think is going to happen? Are you going to be able to compete with the big boys now?
It's a tough environment because, you know, people are still tight on money, and DC and Marvel are putting out a lot of pretty good titles, so it is hard for some of the smaller press guys. Mm-hmm. The important thing is to write a really good book, to get some buzz about it. And I think it's also important, if you're going to compete with Marvel and DC, to have a non-superhero offering. Mm-hmm. DC and Marvel, unfortunately, pretty much have the superhero market cornered for a large degree. One notable exception would be Invincible from Image. But most of the other people who try to launch a superhero book really struggle. Mm-hmm. But if you're into non-superhero stuff, I think there's definitely room. People can only read so many superhero books, and they're willing to try non-superhero stuff to hear some good stuff about it.
Okay.
It's possible. It's just a very hostile environment, but it certainly is possible to launch a new book.
Given how September and October are going, do you have any guesses about what you'll see in November?
I'm cautiously optimistic. We did our initial orders for November now, and there wasn't as much stuff to order. There was slightly fewer titles, and I'm bringing my numbers for DC and some Marvel down to earth a little bit, lowering them just a bit to see. So it's hard to say. I'm hoping it's a really strong month. The DC titles seem pretty rock solid, at least the better ones. Mm-hmm. And Marvel's got some really good stuff coming out in the next few weeks, so I'm really curious to see how that does. So I'm hoping, we do really strong, but I'm not sure there's enough diversity, and I'm not sure, that as the newness wears off about some of these books, if that's where you get to see who's going to come back every month, month after month, to keep reading. That's really, the strength of a book really is important. If it's spectacular, people will be coming back every month. If it's just pretty good, then you're going to start to lose people after, months 4 and 5, I think. So we'll see. Hoping for the best, though.
Well, that's the thing. 6 months down the road is going to be, I think, a real proving ground for all this. This is a great event, and it's done well for everybody. But the thing is, has it really revitalized the industry? Has it made it possible for you guys to sell more and survive? That's going to be the telling of this whole project later down the road, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, certainly in the short term, it's helped us, but is there more competition from the digital format? Are more and more people going to start reading stuff online? Are they still going to make the effort to spend gas to come and browse our store and to look around? Certainly in the short term, when there's new stuff going on, but will they be able to consistently do this over the next 12 months or the next 5 years? I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of competition out there, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Now, do you want to give your location and your podcast and stuff? Why don't you let people know about what Big Planet Comics is up to?
Big Planet Comics in College Park is in College Park, Maryland. We have 3 other stores in the area. You can find our website at www.bigplanetcomics.com. We also do a podcast, the Big Planet Comics Podcast, which you can get on iTunes and from our website. And definitely check out our website for locations and stores. And, we love to talk about comics. So anytime you want to come in and talk, we're there.
That's a great thing about it. Just make sure you put enough time in the meter. That's the only advice.
Yeah, in College Park especially. Yeah, they're pretty strict about that.
Yeah. But yeah, this is fun to come and talk with you guys about. So thanks again, Pete. I mean, hopefully in another month, we'll see how things are doing.
Great. Thanks, Wade.
Thank you. Okay, time for this week's news and previews with Gianluca Glaser. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing well.
And Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
Oh, I'm very drunk, apparently.
I could never tell. Never tell. Anyway, the thing we want to start off with, I sent an email around, and we had an interview with Peter from Big Planet Comics earlier in this podcast, talking about how October did. And he surprised me with some of the stuff he said, but it's borne out in a lot of the stats that came out of Diamond on Friday. And Gianluca, since you're the news guy for this, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about what that said?
Absolutely. Basically, DC Comics beat Marvel again in the October monthly sales, 51% to 30%. That's a much bigger increase than the first debut month, of all 52 of the titles. In terms of periodicals, comic books themselves, they were up from the previous month, and they were up from the previous year. For the month before, they were up 6.8% in dollars and 6.9% in units. From year-to-year comparisons, you had a huge 24.37% increase in dollars and a 32.12% increase in units.
Wow.
Obviously, periodicals have been kind of slowly going down and down for past several years. So, I mean, this kind of event has gotten like a lot of new people on board, or at least increased people from going from saving on trades and going back to periodicals. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool. The list of actual like comics, number one was Justice League number two. The previous month, Batman was like the number one comic. But Justice League had come out the month before, like during the last week of, what was it, August? Mm-hmm. So this time now everything's on the same month. Justice League was one, Batman's two. It reads kind of similar to the last month in terms of the rankings. But the reason for that is kind of interesting is that these orders that came in still had come in prior to the actual first issues coming out. Really only Justice League had probably come out by the time like final orders came in for a lot of these comics. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you've had reorders or second printings and third printings of, you know, the previous month's books that have taken into account with this too. Mm-hmm.
Seven of the top 10 were DC. There were two of the Marvels in the top 10 were number ones, Incredible Hulk number one and Wolverine and the X-Men number one. Fear itself was actually number nine. That was issue number seven. So I found that kind of an intriguing thing. You kind of expect in a Marvel event like that, especially when you get to the final issue, that usually is the number one book of the month, but it wasn't this time. So hardcovers were kind of interesting too, Jean-Luc. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Flashpoint was the top-selling book of the month. We still don't know numbers yet. We only have rankings so far. Number two is The Walking Dead. Volume 7, no big surprise considering, you know, the second season is playing right now. Mm-hmm. You had Batman Arkham City based on the video game. Again, not too big of a surprise considering how big the video game is. Mm-hmm. Most of the other titles are DC. Dark Horse pops in with Allies. I'm not really familiar with that title.
That's Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Strange Allies.
Oh, that's it. Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
Looking above. So that's not too big of a shock considering that's a big franchise for Dark Horse. And those books sell very well. Alan Moore shows up with Neonomicon for Avatar.
Yeah.
It's Alan Moore and H.P. Lovecraft. So you imagine there's going to be like tentacle rape.
Yeah. And there is too. I've read the book. So yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. See, those are all interesting things that are going on. DC had 51% of the unit share, and Marvel was right around 30. So that's kind of reversed from where things were a couple of months ago. Marvel used to get around 45, 48%, and DC was down around 35%. So it's flipped in the last couple of months.
It might be a problem.
Now, I don't want people to take too much into account to the current rankings, actually. I'll be interested to see what the numbers are. Like I said before, these numbers – these rankings of like the DC books themselves haven't taken really into account other than the second and third printing numbers. But for the actual initial runs here, you know, these haven't been taken into account by retailers on popularity yet. Mm-hmm. These orders were done in late August. The first books came out with Justice League, and then everything else came out in September. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting next month where the rankings are going to change, actually, because there are probably some books here like OMAC, maybe Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, you know, that are quite low in the rankings now. But by November numbers, retailers have already seen from the first September sales mm-hmm. what books they want to order more of, what books they need to order less of, as opposed to them going down an arbitrary list saying, oh, Justice League, yeah, that's going to be number one. Oh, Batman, of course, you know, and so on and so on. I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys a question because there's something I'm curious about. In the month of October, we got a lot of reprints of the first issues of the DC books. And the thing I'm thinking, do you guys think that helped push this month up? The fact that some people finally got onto this, holy smoke, I got to get to the bookstore, and started to go back and get the second printings of the number ones. Do you think that helped? Well, let me start with you, Ian.
Well, I think it's bound to have helped because I've got any connectors are going to have got number one issues as in the first issues. And thought, oh, I think I'll have a second edition of that as well. And obviously, a lot of the newbies who want to jump in on point, I'm going to have gone to get issue one as well. So you've got to take that into account.
How about you, Gianluca?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they added to the overall like orders that were originally placed, you know, back in late August. You know, there's like a final order cutoff time for retailers. They order books 2 months in advance. And they can, sure, you know, in the weeks leading up to the book's release, can order more or less. But, you know, they do get like a penalty, kind of like a reorder kind of penalty. So it behooves them to make their final orders 2 months in advance. So you have like those orders that were probably predetermined. But then you also have, like I said, like these orders that were made during the month of September, but then they get billed for October for them because that's when they arrive. Mm-hmm. So they had like sellouts, a lot of those books back in September. So they probably could have done more if they had more copies of the books, if the books didn't like sell out mm-hmm. in September. Mm-hmm. But that kind of carried over to October. I wonder what books broke six figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely Justice League and possibly Batman, but I'm kind of curious to see, you know, how far down like six figures go.
Because we saw a third printing of Swamp Thing, as I mentioned last week. There are multiple printings of some of these books coming out, and I'm just going to be very fascinated to see. I agree with you. I want to see numbers, because I want to know how these are going to do. Now, that said, we were somewhat surprised by October numbers, because a lot of us, and not only us here, but other people expected that after September, October would be something of a decline month. Instead, it was up higher. Now, having said that, and having experienced what we have, I mean, Gianluca, what do you expect to happen then during the month of November?
It's going to be interesting. Like I said, this is really going to take readers. I mean, it's going to really be based on like how those first issue numbers kind of performed locally for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You had some books that came out that were really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some books that came out like maybe Green Arrow that, you know, people weren't so crazy about. And, you know, Green Arrow is probably ranked fairly high, you know, now.
Mm-hmm.
But by November, possibly by that point, the backlash is taken into effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then going on to after November, December is going to tell you something else, because, you know, there were some books that had great first issues, but then the second issues kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of lost their way, you know, or there's some books that maybe improved in their second issue.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see like reactions to that until like December numbers.
I think Suicide Squad, there was a slight dip in quality from in the second issue from the first.
Oh, absolutely. And you're not going to see it in October number, you're not going to see it in October numbers, and you might not see it in November numbers, but by December you'll finally see like how people reacted to, you know, in terms of whether I want to continue this after the second issue.
Ian?
I'd actually agree with what John Lucas says there. I mean, although I'm probably going to continue reading Suicide Squad because I'm a masochist. And plus, I like how they got the Joker's girlfriend dressed. I like the fact that they're using the Arkham Asylum get up.
Okay, what exactly did you drink, Ian? What was that you were drinking? I'm trying to remember.
Pour me some.
Anyway, see, this brings another question into my mind, though. How steady are you going to be to hang on to a book? Let's say you get issue number one, excellent. Issue number two, like Suicide Squad, not so good. Are you going to drop at that point? You going to hang on for a while? How is this going to go forward? I think it's going to depend on the individuals. I think it's going to depend on how much they like what's happening in the book. Are they willing to forgive 1 month or maybe even 2 months before they decide, hey, I don't want that anymore? What do you guys think?
I've given up on Suicide Squad.
Okay.
I'm gonna stick with it because I think the second issue of Suicide Squad was better than the first issue of Green Arrow. Green Arrow was like my low point, It was shite.
Okay, well, today I have to say I'm still buying all 52, and I'm reading all 52, and I have to say that, yeah, I think the quality is this going to happen in any book? I mean, Detective Number One was fantastic, but then Detective Number Two wasn't quite as fantastic because you don't have that big shocking panel at the end of the book, although it was good. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a great book. Batman's Number One and Two I thought were very consistent in quality from one to the other. I thought Green Lantern was great fun. Action is interesting. We're already starting to see Number Threes coming out, so my feeling is, and what I'm going to do, and I can only speak for myself, is I'm going to keep with them until something, I mean, really just crashes and burns in front of me. Until then, I'm going to keep buying these books because I like what they're doing. Overall, they're telling pretty interesting stories. Now, before we get off the subject, I do want to talk about one other thing. There was an interesting quote from John Rood, I believe, from DC Comics in the article that we were talking about. No, it's not in this one, but I saw another version of it on a different thing. The Washington Post actually approached him and asked him about that. And the question was sort of asked to him, how do you feel now that your percentages in the markets are up and your all these, you know, the business aspect things are going on are improving for your company? And, you know, I'm sure inside Mr. Rood, there's somebody going, yeah, we're beating Marvel. You know, but what he said was really interesting to me. He says, well, we don't worry about that so much. All we worry about is cornering the market on telling good stories or something to that effect. And I thought, you know, that's a nice way to look at it, because a lot of people look at show business as a business thing and don't care whether or not you like the stories or not. As long as you're buying the product, they don't care. But if DC truly is looking at this from a perspective that we want to tell good stories and the markets will take care of themselves, then I'm all in for that. I think that's a great thing. Anyway, why don't we go ahead and get on to other bits of news? Ian, you said you've got some news, so why don't we go back to you, and what news items have you got for us?
Right. Well, first and foremost, you know, these are both things that you posted at Sci-Fi Post on that.
Mm-hmm.
In the week, so I'm stealing your news, Wayne. Well, you've got to steal from the best.
That's right.
They say plagiarism is the best form of flattery, so that's here right. We go. ominous headline here. You could be a red shirt in the new IDW Star Trek comic. And it opens up, you know, with lots of adjectives. It says, would you defend your comic shop retailer with your very knife? Well, here's your chance to prove it in writing. And I think you can explain the rest of the story, Wayne, because I'm too drunk.
Well, what's funny is that issue number 5, you're going to be able to get your mug and the mug of your comic shop owner on the front of a limited number of issues that they're going to provide for the store. I mean, like collector's editions. And of course, you know, the store that we go to, my brother and I, Randy brought it up in front of him. And I was sort of like, well, okay, you know, if you talk about this, this means we're really going to have to dive in and try to win this contest. So he wants us to try and dive in, and you have to write like 300 words or something. And you turn it in to IDW, and they'll pick the winners, and those people will get their mugs on the – and I say mugs, I mean their faces in the drawings on the front. And if you go to scifipulse.net, you'll see the preliminary drawing, which has a great big question mark in the face place. But it shows a red shirt jumping in front of the yellow shirt behind. So we have a task in front of us to write a 300-word essay on why our retailer is the best in the world, why we would throw ourselves in front of a loaded phaser to save him. And that's kind of, I have to say, a lot of people have really been struck by this because everybody wants to be part of the Star Trek legend. And I think that's what this cover gives those of us on the outskirts a chance to do. So it's a fun thing. I think that IDW has done a smart thing with this. It's going to be a real interesting contest. So it'll be fun.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, like I won't throw myself in front of an loaded phaser for anyone. So.
You won't win the contest, then. That's all.
I'd actually aim an loaded phaser at the organizer of the contest, and so like hold the artist at phaser point and say, "Put my face there."
Okay.
All right. You got another news item there, Ian. How about we get to that?
Yeah, I'm sober enough to do this one now. Okay. Mattel making more DC toys. This is actually good news. I like Mattel. Of course, Mattel used to do, I think Mattel at one point or other, they used to be Pangitoy, and they used to do the Star Wars figures before Hasbro put that license over. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're doing more DC figures. They released a line of DC figures, quite successful ones, and they're looking to do more. They've got an agreement which grants them the right to produce action figures and other merchandise for the upcoming live-action movies, The Dark Knight Rises and Man of Steel. They are also going to release official toys based on the studio future animated projects, including Green Lantern, the animated series, and it's a multi-year deal. We have developed an incredibly successful partnership with Mattel, and we are very excited about taking the relationship to new levels, said Brad Knob, president of Warner Brothers Consumer Products. Warner Brothers and DC Entertainment have an unrivaled slate of content support across all key platforms essential to our global consumer products business, which is anchored by our alliance with Mattel. DC and Warner have stated that the film will have unprecedented access to its properties. Mattel will deliver products across all of its core brands, such as Hot Wheels, Matchbox, Barbie, Mattel Games, and Fisher-Price. In related news, Mattel has also entered an agreement with Diamond Comic Distributors to ship its 6 action figures across Europe.
When I was a kid, I would have given anything to have the action figures that people can buy now. You know, I used to have to cut figures out of the paper and hold little paper figures and stuff like that to play with them. Now you can actually buy the action figures. I mean, almost any kind of character that's been in comics has an action figure. And I think that's a cool thing. I'm a little jealous of the kids today because they have access to these things. But hey, I still buy plenty of them for myself anyway, so I really can't complain.
To be honest, I'd give anything to have kept all my Star Wars figures from the 80s and 70s because I had every single one of them. And if I hadn't sold that, I could have sold them all now and made an absolute bloody king in.
Yeah, too true. Oh. Too true. Cause
I had a lot, too. I even had Rancor.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I even had the thing that Luke Skywalker rode, and it had had a belly that opened up and you could stick Luke Skywalker in it. Do the scene of Empire Strikes Back. It was great. He even had the Land Speeder.
Wow.
Talking of which, there's actually a limited edition of the Land Speeder just come out recently.
Wow.
I used to have like an Imperial Guard, one of those red.
Oh, yeah. I had two of those. Mm. And I also have the Rebel Transporter that was in Empire Strikes Back. It was like that ship that looked like, it kind of had a very odd shape. What it looked like is probably a little bit too rude to sort of like say on air.
Okay.
But, you know, I had that. I had the X-Wing fighter. I had Darth Vader's TIE fighter. I had all the figures. I even had, back in the 70s when I was a kid, I had the Death Star playset, which was all sides of the Death Star. And that was, you know, and sadly, it wasn't really built to last. It was made out of cardboard. You built it out of cardboard, and the only plastic bit really was a gun turret at the top sort of thing. But it had the trash compartment. It had every single major room that you've seen in the Death Star from the movie. And it looked absolutely fantastic. I got hours of fun out of that with the action figures.
Cool.
But I literally had everything, you know. Instead of getting sweets, I'd get action figures every week because they're about 99p or something daft like that, 70s and 80s, which is giving my age away.
So you sold them? Is that how you got rid of them?
Yeah, I sold them in order to get my first computer.
Oh, well.
When I was about 15 or 16.
Well, but that makes sense. I can see that's a fair trade, I think, in some ways. I mean, it's always easy to go back and say, oh, I should have done this and I should have hung on to that. But let's face it, a computer, you know, is going to serve you well going forward. And I'm thinking of all the mothers and fathers going out there going, don't listen to him. Get a computer. No, don't do it. It's better to don't hang on to everything that you've ever bought.
Because those figures, they're probably not worth a lot, but that computer.
Yeah. Sad to say, but you know, the truth of the matter is, though, is that, you know, everybody has, so many people have had this experience when you go off to college and your parents go into your room and say, and this will never be worth anything. Out they go. So, unfortunately, Ian, you did this to yourself, though. You can't blame your parents for this.
No, it was my parents' fault because they made me sell them so I could get my first computer.
Ah, they wouldn't give me money.
Yeah, the deal was they didn't have enough money. They wanted to get me a computer for my birthday. Hmm. And they didn't have enough money to do it, so they sort of like taught me. They twisted my arm to, you know, so I'd sell my Star Wars figures. So it's not my fault; it's their fault. They were entirely responsible.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we've shredded the figures thing there for long enough. Jean-Luc, have you got other news you wanted to bring up?
Absolutely. November previews has come out. Some interesting stuff here. On the cover, you have IDW promoting their second volume of Infestation. Mm. IDW, you know, has only recently been in the premiere section of Diamond Previews. So it's kind of interesting to see this company, you know, get a front cover spot, which is very rare. DC, Image, Dark Horse, Marvel, you know, they usually get that. So it's kind of cool to see that. There's some interesting things here first. It titles. But first, I want to mention one thing that I've noticed. And that is, and this is kind of like a little insider perspective here for people, you know, you don't get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ads in this book, they're quite pricey. The deal is that for a regular ad page, when a lot of people don't know, if you're doing regular advertising and if you get like a 15% discount on your ads with Diamond, you're still paying $1,955. For like one single full color ad page. Wow. So, I mean, advertising in previews or in magazines are that way too, depending on the circulation, you know, it gets quite pricey. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed, you know, over the past several months, when I first got on the show with you guys, mm-hmm. you know, I would go through like who was advertising what in previews. And, you know, I would talk about how Dynamite has like, you know, these front page covers. Mm-hmm. And then they would have like 7 to 12 pages, not in their section, but before their section near the beginning of the book. You know, you'd have like these full page ads shortly after, you know, the editorial pages and previews. And then this particular month, I've noticed quite a big decrease in like all the publishers in terms of their advertising. Now, that said, yes, Dynamite still does an inside front cover ad for Kirby Genesis Dragon Blade. You know, they have Vampirella here. Aspen, who doesn't advertise very often, makes an appearance here. The other side of the inside front cover has Dark Horse. They usually do one ad. And then you have like another spread for Dynamite. So Dynamite is spending a lot of money. And these particular ads in the inside front covers, you know, they run you $3,200. So, I mean, that is quite expensive. But gone are the days of seeing, you know, that 7 pages or 12 pages of full color, just regular newsprint pages near the front of the book. Mm-hmm. Another part of previews is that you have a short order form. It's usually right here. It's between pages 16 and 17 of the book. And usually it's a double-sided kind of small insert here for people who want to place small orders. And this particular month, you have Diamond basically promoting a toy from Broadsword Comics. And on the back, you have NewsChestNews.com, which is owned by Diamond. So really, you don't have anybody, you know, usually you'd see like two different publishers publishing, you know, on these different sides. So you have to imagine Diamond Toys is like doing advertising on both sides. That's like in-house. They probably didn't pay any money for that. So it is quite an interesting thing. There was a fold-out poster the previous month for Guillermo del Toro's book, but there's no fold-out poster this month. And, you know, it's quite an interesting thing. Now, enough with the doom and gloom. What's in the actual book itself? Some really interesting stuff. Boom Studios did a page one ad just after the inside front cover for a Grant Morrison book. It's based on the Avengers TV show, and it's called Steed and Mrs. Peel.
Yeah.
So quite interesting. You know, you have Grant Morrison. That's going to be like a very, I would imagine, high-selling book. I don't know if it's based off of like anything he previously had written, never published, or if it's something that, you know, he's doing this new deal with Boom Studios. But it is quite amazing.
Well, let me interject one thing before you got to change on to the other subject is the fact that, of course, to the folks in the UK, these people are known as the Avengers. And, of course, if you go in these states and say the Avengers, you don't think these people are Steed and Mrs. Peel. You think they are Captain America. And so, hence, this is why it's called Steed and Mrs. Peel, to try to differentiate this from Marvel's Avengers.
Which one do you reckon's older?
Good call.
Which one do you reckon's older, Wayne? Because the Avengers, I think the Avengers TV series came out in around about 1963.
I think that's older, but I don't think the audiences in the States would know what you're talking about if you said the Avengers. I think they would, especially now with multiple Avengers books out there, the Dead Avengers and every other Avengers in the world. I think they're trying to make sure that this differentiates from that. And, you know, it certainly tells us what the book's about. But I just wanted to make sure why people say, why didn't they call it the Avengers? Well, that's why.
So it's going to be a $3.99, 32-page comic book, and I'm not sure if it's going to be ongoing or miniseries or how many issues it's going to run, but it is quite interesting. Boom Studio also has Peanuts issue number one solicited as well for December. It's January. For a January release. Other interesting titles, you have Kevin Keller, number one, start of a new ongoing series from Archie. Avatar has Ferals, written by David Lapham. You also have new Lone Ranger ongoing series from Dynamite. And we mentioned it before in the previous podcast, but you have Fatale by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips for Image Comics, new miniseries dealing with both crime noir and horror, H.P. Lovecraft type horror. And then I mentioned it before about IDW being on the front cover. It's for their second Infestation. Now they have – in what Infestation is, for folks that don't know, it's a way for them to have like a crossover event of all their different titles, both their license and original stuff too. And in the previous one, it dealt with like a zombie outbreak. With the new Infestation, it's H.P. Lovecraft as well with some demon creatures basically. Between the first infestation, the second infestation, IDW's picked up the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle license, so they've been included in this. And I wasn't sure if 30 Days of Night was in the first infestation, but now that they have a new ongoing with Steve Niles series of 30 Days of Night, they've included an infestation as well. So
cool.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's as always. I wonder, because I thought the previous book was a little smaller than it had been in the past, so that explains why.
Yeah. I see like a lot of small publishers, so it's, you know, you see publishers come and go, but I still see quite a lot of them in the independent section. But yeah, you don't see a lot of them buying full-page ads. Dynamite still has like a full-page ad section. Boom Studios still interjects regular ads in between like their listings of the book. In this case, they have one ad for Peanuts, and they have a two-page spread for Steed and Mrs. Peel. So four ads in total for them, one first page and these other three.
I was kind of interested because the Peanuts number zero just came out this past week, and it's going to be 3 months. It's 3 months until we get number one, hey?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I guess, you know, you kind of wanted to take – we went Canadian there. I guess we wanted to take – they wanted to probably take their time, you know, in terms of making sure that these – because it is going to be monthly. I guess you want to make sure that it's not going to run behind in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, usually you do want to do like a preview book a month or two before. But at this point now, though, now the preview book is out, retailers can actually decide whether or not they want to order this book, and they have a month to decide and see how the sales of the Zero issue do as well.
That's a good point. Now that they know what the book's going to look like, they can actually order appropriately. So that's a good point. So now we can move into the previews. Ian, do you want to mention a couple of books you're going to be looking forward to this week?
Yeah, sure, because I do believe that Demon Knights is out this week, along with Suicide Squad and – what's the other one out this week?
Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, number 3 is going to be out.
Yes.
That's right. That's probably the one I'm most looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Lemire, who does wonderful things. So those are the ones I kind of figured those are the ones you'd be looking forward to. Anything else that you got that you're looking forward to as far as upcoming stuff?
Not as far as upcoming stuff right now, but as far as stuff that's probably in the mail to me, Bionic Man issue 3, Planet of the Apes issue 7, Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes. I ordered that based on having read the PDF very quickly, so that's on its way to me. Mm-hmm. Action issue 3, Detective issue 3, and the Stormwatch issue 3 as well.
Okay, so
that's basically what's in the mail to me.
All right, so you can't wait for the mail to get there then.
Yeah, I can't wait for the mail to get here. I'm being loose end with reading right now.
Okay, well, Gianluca, how about you? What are you looking forward to as far as what's coming out this week?
As far as coming out, there's a few titles for DC that are cool. We mentioned Frankenstein, Agent of Shade number 3. Mm-hmm. You also have Batwoman number 3 and Batgirl number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, Wayne, you like Batgirl a lot, but for me, Batwoman is the title that I'm really looking forward to.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's just amazing artwork.
I want to interject here. You know, this is the difference between Gianluca and Wayne. Wayne likes girls, Gianluca likes women. That's, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I like straight girls, and he likes lesbian women, so I guess I don't know what that says either.
Well,
lesbian military women.
I think Gianluca is keeping his fingers crossed, and he's actually hoping against all hope that Batwoman is bisexual. That's what it is.
Let's move on to another book right away.
In terms of other titles. I just wanted to mention one other title. Okay. That is. Yeah, I didn't see like a lot of other things, but one thing that's very sad to see is the very last issue of Darkwing Duck, issue number 18.
Oh.
It comes out next week.
Grief.
Yes.
I'm grieving because they've done a really good job with that book. It's been so much fun to read that.
Oh, hey, guys. I forgot to mention this before, but I wanted to mention this. Do we have time?
Sure.
I want to read you like the worst solicitation text I've read recently.
Okay.
This is in the November previews. Mm-hmm. It's for Blue Water, and it's for Vincent Price Presents number 38. Now, I like what Blue Water puts out. They've actually been increasing a number of their original titles with doing like a Sherlock Holmes and a Quartermain book, and William Shatner has a Man of War comic book series based on his book.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular like solicitation text scratches my head because, okay, what a solicitation text does is it gets you to want to read the book. It gives you a little bit of the story, but just enough leaves you some secrets there, you know, and then tells you whether or not, you know, the first thing is kind of introductory, and then subsequent issues kind of say, you know, whether or not they're going to escape this particular, you know, predicament they're going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what Vincent Price Presents number 38 says.
Okay.
A small, weird western town on the edge of hell is invaded by a horde of demons in the shape of bandits. On their wild rampage through the town, the bandits run afoul of an Asperger syndrome boy with strange powers and his silent giant companion. The boy and the giant defeat the demon bandits and drive them back into hell. The boy climbs on the shoulder of his giant friend and rides off into the sunset, leaving the town's preacher and mayor, who looks suspiciously like Vincent Price, wondering.
Wow, I don't even need to read that.
Exactly. Oh, thanks for telling me. The kid and the giant beat the demon bandits.
You know, what was...
And Vincent Price shows up as the preacher mayor at the end.
Mm-mm-mm.
All right.
Well, they need to hire you to do their writing at Blue Water, sounds like, Gianluca.
I mean, if they want to pay me to do that, I definitely do.
Okay.
Couldn't do worse than this.
Actually, I actually sent John Mueker an email recent because he sent a note to.
It was a pitch.
They're releasing the Stan Lee book, The Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
He sent a note to them along with our solicitation. And in John Mueker's text, he was describing Sci-Fi Post on there. I just thought, you know, this guy could sell sand to the Arabs.
Whatever.
Okay.
You can only do that kind of pitch with certain people. Mm-hmm. Not everybody. Okay. I couldn't do that to Boom.
Okay. Well,
say that.
Well, to wrap up here, let me run down a couple of the books that I'm looking forward to, too. We've mentioned several of the DC ones. Batman and Robin, number 3, which I'm looking forward to greatly. Deathstroke, number 3. Green Lantern, number 3, as well as a Green Lantern Super Spectacular, number 3. I think that's one of those reprint books. Grifter, Huntress, Legion Lost, Mr. Terrific, Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, which I really like the first one of that. I hope this continues on. Resurrection Man, number 3. Superboy. Now, when I look through DC, I noticed there are no second or third printings listed this time. So when November comes out, I'm curious to see how that influences the numbers. I do want to mention just a couple other quick things that I always really like. Wolf number 4 from Atlas Comics is coming out. Phoenix number 4 came out last week. So I'm hopeful that book's going to survive. Rachel Rising number 3, which is an interesting book. I really like that real well, too.
I do have a very, very quick question, though, for John Mueker.
Okay.
And as you haven't posed this one, but John Mueker, you know, with Christmas coming up, you know, you got November, you got December. Yeah. With those months coming up, do you think that's actually going to impact on the sale of DC 52? And can you actually see the sale of trade paperbacks or actually going up as opposed to the trend at the moment as they seem to have been going down? Can you see them going up again with it being, you know, coming towards Christmas?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I don't see periodic sale changes during Christmas time. None of the like DC 52s are going to be in a traded format by December. Mm-hmm. But in terms of December's regular catalog, DC and Marvels and all the other publishers' trades, yeah, you're definitely going to see like an increase of trade buying, you know, during the holiday season. But remember, there was like that incident with Barnes & Noble's and DC's 100 graphic novels that they had, where basically they took them down off the shelves based on the deal that DC did with the Kindle Fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's if this particular situation isn't resolved and Barnes & Noble's do not put DC's books back on the shelves, those 100 books, then yeah, that's a lot of money that's going to be lost over the holiday season.
For DC, maybe. I mean, they're not going to do the same to Marvel's books. So
no, that was done as a reaction. Barnes & Noble's did that as a reaction to DC giving special discount exclusive to the Amazon Kindle Fire. So this happened like 2-3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You know, Barnes & Noble's decided to pull them off the shelves. And they were supposedly going to do that for as long as the deal with DC and the Amazon Kindle was going on. Mm-hmm. And I believe that deal was for 4 months.
Yeah, I also heard that Books A Million, who were a bit smaller than Barnes & Noble, were actually going to follow suit as well. And there's actually another book chain in the States that's actually about the same size as Barnes & Noble. You just simply can't be asked about it and just going to sort of like put them on the shelves anyway.
Oh, yeah, that was Hastings. Yeah, Hastings, not nearly as big as Barnes & Noble's, but it's probably the closest competitor in terms of like a store having like national presence. They're not in every state, but they're in most states, Hastings. So, yeah, they don't really care. They're going to just stock whatever. They don't have like a Nook or a Amazon Kindle type of device. So Barnes & Noble's decision was really based off of that in terms of them wanting to promote their book reading device, you know, as opposed to Amazon getting like such a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's kind of a minefield there. You got to be careful who you do like exclusives with, especially in the digital world. You know, retailers are still very antsy on digital as well, too. When they hear about it, you know, they still fear that digital is going to put them out of business. Some people.
Okay, well, on that note, I think we're going to call this to a close. So thanks, guys. We'll talk again. And we'll certainly be talking about digital comics more in the future. So thanks a lot.
Yes.
And that's a wrap for the 34th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week when we'll have more interviews, news, and previews. But until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.